Welcome to Enclave On Air. I'm your host today, Ashling Wehner. Enclave On Air is a podcast from Enclave, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Enclave covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, sponsored by GSK, we had the pleasure of speaking with Andrew Coykendall, MD, about the FDA approval of momelotinib in myelofibrosis with anemia. Dr. Coykendall is an assistant member in the Department of Malignant Hematology at Moffitt Cancer Center in Tampa, Florida. On September 15, 2023, the FDA approved momelotinib for the treatment of adult patients with intermediate or high-risk myelofibrosis with anemia. This regulatory decision was backed by findings from the Phase 3 MOMENTUM trial. In MOMENTUM, 25% of patients who received momelotinib achieved a myelofibrosis symptom assessment form version 4.0 total symptom score reduction of at least 50% versus 9% of patients who received danazol. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Coykendall discussed the significance of this approval, key data from MOMENTUM, and how momelotinib alters the myelofibrosis treatment paradigm. So speaking today about the FDA approval of momelotinib in myelofibrosis, just to start off, what is the significance of this approval?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is just a further advancement in kind of the perpetual story we've had with myelofibrosis over the past decade, which is, you know, trying to on one hand, bring JAK inhibition to as many patients with myelofibrosis as possible. Obviously, ruxolitinib really changed the game as far as myelofibrosis goes, really allowed patients to appreciate quite profound symptomatic improvement in terms of splenomegaly and disease-related symptoms, also, associated with a modest survival benefit there. However, we continue to run into issues with patients that have anemia, which is most patients with myelofibrosis, patients that have low platelets, aren't able to see the full benefit of JAK inhibition. Pacritinib certainly helped with some aspect of that with its accelerated approval, but then now momelotinib, offers to fully dose a JAK inhibitor, a potent JAK inhibitor, right, for patients that are anemic and maybe even able to help with that anemia as well. In addition, it looks like it can help with patients with low platelets as well, since it enrolled down to 25,000 platelets. So, then on one hand, we're extending the benefits of JAK inhibition to more people, but on the other end, we're holding the promise of potentially helping with that anemia that's largely been an area of unmet need for a long time for patients with MF.
Can you dive into a little bit more about the mechanism of action of momelotinib?
All of our main approved agents are JAK inhibitors, right? They all hit JAK2, but there's differentiating factors as far as their kinase inhibition profile. Momelotinib is a little bit different in the sense that, like ruxolitinib, it hits JAK1 and JAK2. Pacritinib, and to a lesser extent, fedratinib, are more selective for JAK2. So you have this JAK1, JAK2 inhibition with momelotinib similar to ruxolitinib. But then you also have this inhibition of ACVR1, which we believe plays a key role in modulating hepcidin and improving anemia. This is a MOA that really potentially distinguishes it from ruxolitinib in the sense that now, instead of worsening anemia, which we often see happen with rux or with fedratinib that don't hit ACVR, now we are able to kind of get those benefits of JAK2 and JAK1 inhibition, those symptom benefits, that spleen benefit, but also potentially at least mitigate some of the anemia we saw with rux, or potentially help overall lead to an improvement in anemia, less transfusions for patients that receive momelotinib.
What patient population did the MOMENTUM trial specifically enroll?
The MOMENTUM trial is actually the third phase 3 trial for momelotinib. But ultimately, the MOMENTUM trial enrolled patients that had previously seen ruxolitinib, that were anemic, that had some degree of MF-related symptoms, and had splenomegaly. So again, you had a rux-experienced group. Now, they didn't have to be on rux for a long time. It could have been just about a month, and they had some anemia with it. And those patients were randomized 2-to-1 to either be on momelotinib or to be on danazol, which we know is an active control. Meaning that it is something we use for patients that are anemic and something that we do expect to see some anemia benefits with.
And so then what were some of the key efficacy findings from this trial?
Yeah, so the primary endpoint of the trial was actually symptom improvement. So looking at just a 50% reduction in total symptom score. And I think that overall, this is something that we expected to see improvement with momelotinib over danazol, except for the fact that we know that symptoms can be related not just to inflammatory cytokine-driven symptoms or to splenomegaly, can also be due to anemia symptoms. And danazol, we actually expected to help with some of those. Superiority for symptom improvement compared to danazol, but also some key secondary endpoints as well, right? So improvement in splenomegaly, reduction compared to danazol, and also, though not superior, didn't meet the criteria for superior, but certainly nominally better and certainly not inferior in terms of transfusion independence rate. So more patients on the momelotinib arm were transfusion independent after 24 weeks compared to the danazol arm. On this trial, what you see is spleen response rates that are, you know, quite similar to what you might expect to see with ruxolitinib or a JAK inhibitor. But, you know, what I would call out is that momelotinib has actually been compared directly to ruxolitinib previously in Simplify 1 trial, where treatment naive patients were randomized to either momelotinib or ruxolitinib. And on that one, momelotinib was not inferior to ruxolitinib in terms of spleen responses. And so we know it is a potent JAK inhibitor in terms of inducing spleen responses. And so it was exciting to see it play out like that in this pivotal trial.
And so then what is the safety profile of this agent?
Relatively benign. I think that when we think about JAK inhibitors, you know, we think about the safety profiles, and certainly there are some things I'll hone in on, but in general, these are palliative medications. These are medications that we're using to make people feel better, to have improvement in quality of life and functionality. And so really we need them to be well tolerated if that's our ultimate goal, is for people to feel better. And when one of our key findings is symptoms improving, you know, you can understand that likely these are well-tolerated medications, certainly in the short term, if patients are reporting that they feel better than they did previously after going on to these medications. In terms of things to watch out for, I mean, there's a mild increase in GI toxicity compared to what was seen with danazol, but still relatively low rates, 20-21% as far as nausea goes. This is like very usually low-grade nausea. This is probably lower than what we would have seen or what we have seen in other trials with pacunitinib and fedratinib that inhibit FLT3. And typically anything that inhibits FLT3 is associated with some degree of GI toxicity. So maybe some mild GI side effects. In previous trials, there was some concern for peripheral neuropathy. That wasn't really played out on the MOMENTUM study, so we didn't see too much of that. And in terms of anemia, thrombocytopenia, actually really relatively low rates of that. In fact, you know, this is an agent that's likely to improve or at least stabilize anemia and was able to be leveraged safely in patients with quite low platelet counts. So not too much to be concerned about from the hematologic side effects. And when you think about kidneys and things like that, that actually had a lot fewer adverse effects on the kidneys than danazol did. So somewhat benign in that fashion as well.
With this approval, where do you see momelotinib fitting into the overall myelofibrosis treatment paradigm?
The clearest answer is patients that are quite anemic that have really struggled to be on ruxolitinib and keep it at adequate doses without either needing transfusions or developing symptomatic anemia. That's the ideal population. But certainly, I think you could think about it outside of those bounds as well. I think anyone with anemia and some degree of splenomegaly symptoms, it could be afforded momelotinib as an option, given the concern that if you start them on rux or fedratinib, that hemoglobin may drop, may push people into transfusion dependency. In kind of that anemic MF population, the outstanding questions are, you know, what about patients that don't have symptomatic splenomegaly or don't have a ton of disease-related symptoms but are anemic, this kind of cytopenic MF population? Is this now going to be our treatment of choice for those individuals? Nominally, this was better at anemia than danazol, so are we going to be now choosing this over danazol in a patient that without too much spleen or symptoms? I think that's tough to say right now, but certainly I think you could make an argument for momelotinib in that space. And then in patients that are not anemic, that have been on Rux, but for whatever reason have to move to a second line agent, you know, is this something that you're going to leverage there, knowing that kind of anemia is part of the natural history of this disease over time, and that it may be reasonable to start this type of an agent earlier on rather than later. So I think there's a lot of different areas where this could be a beneficial agent, but certainly the anemic, you know, population is very clear.
Overall, what is your main message for colleagues regarding this approval?
This is another tool in the toolbox. And I think this is another reason to really go back and start to differentiate and understand, you know, when and why you'd use different JAK inhibitors. We're going to have four now, I think, and then we have, like, obviously, you know, Rux, fedratinib, you know, pacritinib on an accelerated approval for markedly low platelets, and now momelotinib. You have to understand why and when you're going to use one over the other, when you're going to switch from one towards the other, you know, when you're going to dose modify and which agents are best for which one. So I think this is a good time to really think about those questions and have a clear plan in mind. It's great to have different options for patients, but knowing when to use them is going to make sure that we're using them in the right way.
And so then just looking to the future, is there any ongoing or upcoming myelofibrosis research that you're involved in or that Moffitt is involved in that you'd like to highlight?
Yeah, a few things. I mean, obviously, we're still trying to bring disease modifying therapies to patients with myelofibrosis and all myeloproliferative neoplasms. We're very interested in these CALR directed approaches that are looking at patients that have CALR mutated myelofibrosis or essential thrombocythemia using either vaccine or based approaches or monoclonal antibody based approaches or potentially things like bispecific T cell engagers. These are potentially ways we can, modify the underlying disease, and something we're quite interested in going forward at Moffitt. Aside from that, we're really interested in coming up with what sorts of therapies, combination or otherwise, are going to really meaningfully, get complete responses and allow patients to live longer, healthier lives. This is certainly exciting times in MF, and hopefully we can continue to make progress.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air, sponsored by GSK. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you like today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms, so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.